are listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To subscribe to this podcast, visit questformeaning.org or search for Church of the Larger Fellowship in the iTunes store.
No, I'm in Peekskill, New York, and we spend a little while chatting this morning, and Meg asked me if I had anything to chat about, and I just want to say that I'm not in a super chatty mood. My heart is fairly heavy. This morning, a dear friend of mine, Danielle Glad, passed away last Saturday in the early morning hours after a year-long battle with pancreatic cancer at 47 years old. And Danielle is beloved not only to me, but many people around Unitarian Universalism, Meg, and part of our SUSE, the Southeast UU Summer Institute community, our tribe, and many people who've known her for years. She was on the vanguard of young adult ministry in Unitarian Universalism when she was in seminary at Meadville Lombard, and derailed from pursuing Unitarian Universalist ministry in part because of the white supremacy in our system. I think it's important to name that. Danielle was a fierce truth teller, so she would want me to remember her that way. So my heart is a little heavy this morning, and I'm glad to be here, though. How are you, Meg?
I'm also really sad about Danielle. It's just way too young, 47. She was a force. I met her up. She worked at the UUA back in, I don't know, the early 90s, right? That's when I got to know her, and before seminary. And she was just a vivacious, loving presence. I was moved to tears. Her final words on Facebook were, "I love you all." We don't know if she dictated those to somebody or had given them advance to say that when she knew that she was about to die. But she, you know, pancreatic cancer is just ugly. And I guess we all knew where the train was going, but I was at least in some denial about how fast it would get there. She leaves a beloved son. Yeah, it's hard. It's a small movement. We love each other. And I was here staying with Jake Morrill. He's the one who invited me to San Miguel. And I didn't know that he'd grown up with her. She was part of the Knoxville, Tennessee crowd of LRY that he was. Or YRU.
Jake and Danielle went to prom together in high school. So they have known each other for many years.
So she had many, many connections within Unitarian Universalism. And I know that a lot of us are grieving. And I'm excited to hear that you'll be doing some kind of commemoration at SUSE, where she was beloved, as well as the Southeast UU Summer Institute, as well as many other places that she'll be remembered. But yeah, most of all in our hearts. So yeah, sobering, Michael, but we'll keep trying telling the truth and upending patriarchy and white supremacy in her honor. Jessica, are you ready to talk tech now?
I am ready. So as you all can tell, this is our first time doing The View on Facebook Live, and we are super excited about it. And at the same time, our excitement is mixed with nerves as we try to figure out how to do this. And so I am on the Facebook Live comment thread to this post. So if you have questions, you post them there and I will pass them along. If you have comments, I'll pass them along to our internal chat. And I'm also on Twitter. And I'm going to hang out here and participate in this conversation at the same time as much as I can. But if I look confused or have a blank stare, it likely has nothing to do with the conversation. but this is super exciting, and I'm really glad to have you here, John and Samantha. Thanks for being here while we're testing out this new technology.
So I think this will also be broadcast on YouTube later, not live streamed, but later. And the podcast should be the same as always.
Yes, yes. The podcast will be in the same place as always. And then I will post this video, which I am recording, to YouTube. So if that's where you prefer to watch it, you can go and check it out there later.
So we are excited, as you might be able to tell from backgrounds. Samantha and John, our guests today, who I will introduce in just a moment, are also in San Miguel de Allende. And it's an unusual thing to actually meet our guests in person. Usually I'm more like Michael sitting across the country, across the world from the people that we have on. So that's really fun. Besides the fact that it's beautiful here, it's really fun to have them. But before I move to them, I did just want to show you where I am because it's so amazing. So I'm just going to turn my computer. So I'm in a courtyard. This is John and his wife Carolyn's courtyard, and it's gorgeous. And I'm going to show you the sky too, which is really beautiful and amazing here. And just make everybody jealous because I spent the whole winter in Minnesota, so I need to, you know, make you jealous now if I can. So our guests today. Uh-oh, now I'm getting feedback. Why? Okay. All right. Our guests today, we have two on the same screen. And that's fitting because they're a team and they work together. Samantha Silva and John, oh God, wait a second. Simsarian. Sorry about that. Let's start over with that sentence. Samantha Silva and John Simsarian are part of the strong leadership here of Caminos Juntos, We Walk Together. And they'll be sharing about their work with that. John is also the president of the UU Fellowship of San Miguel. John is also the president of the Fellowship of San Miguel Allende. Samantha Silva has been brought on board as the program coordinator for Caminos Juntos. She's been living in San Miguel Allende for 7 years, though she's from Acapulco. She has a marketing degree, and she's been volunteering with nonprofits in San Miguel for the last couple of years. So she'll bring in more of the perspective of, you know, the programmatic stuff. But we're really excited to talk about Caminos Juntos because we've had a number of shows about immigration from the U.S. side, and many of us are witnessing the massive deportations in our own communities that are going on. And we've talked about that, and we'll continue to talk about that. But it's kind of interesting to be down on the other side of the border and to see that, though the story might end in Minnesota with how I see these deportees, that their stories continue. And so today we're going to kind of see what some Unitarian Universalists are doing on the other side of the border. John, as I mentioned, is also the president of the UU Fellowship here. So John, maybe you could start by just creating a little UU context before we move on to the program. Tell me about the fellowship here. How big is it? How long has it been going on? What do y'all do?
Sure. Welcome. Sure. Thank you very much. And thank you very much for having Samantha and me on the program. And we're honored, Meg, to have you visiting here in San Miguel de Allende. This is a city that we love, which is a city right smack in the middle of Mexico in the state of Guanajuato, which is a relatively small state, but an important agricultural state here in Mexico. I've been president of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of San Miguel de Allende for the past year, and I guess I had the honor of being reelected for another 2-year term just this last March. This is a fellowship that has been in existence for 30 years. We celebrated our 30th year anniversary last year. And in the last 2 years, the fellowship has been growing substantially. We've increased our membership from somewhere around 85 to 130 people, which is significant. This winter, which is our big month when we have a lot of tourists here, we had actually our largest number of people coming to a Sunday service of 240 people coming. We are a lay-led fellowship, although we pay ministers to come and present one or two services. We have half of our services led by outside visiting ministers, which is very exciting because we get the opportunity to meet a lot of very interesting people. So we're happy to have people let us know if they're interested in coming to beautiful San Miguel to join us for services. We're also in the process of trying to, I'll put a plug in if that's all right, Meg. We're also in the process of trying to recruit somebody who's retired and would like to come and live in Mexico and help us with the fellowship, a UU minister. So that's something on our website that could be found. So that's sort of a quick background about the fellowship. All the money that we raise, and we do pledging, all the money that we raise is used for two things, basically. To support the fellowship, we have no building, so we don't have a lot of overhead costs. Over half of what we raise, we pass out in grants on an annual basis. We have a formal grant process. And this year, we're funding 8 different nonprofit organizations here in San Miguel, which are geared to supporting Mexicans who find themselves in poverty and need support. So we do scholarships, we do community organizing in some of the outlying villages, because there are a lot of major poverty issues, depletion of the water of the water table, and so forth.
So, John, I know that the congregation is overwhelmingly expats, correct? So, your services are in English, as I understand it. I'll go this Sunday. I haven't been yet, but I know you and I had the pleasure of meeting with a local activist here this week, who said she loves to go. She's bilingual, and that she's talking to a lot of the local people who would also love to go. And so I think it's interesting, the kind of expat culture and the Mexican culture and how they interact, and how it seems like you're reaching out. She was so, this woman, Sarah, who's local, was so excited about the fellowship and said that a lot of the Mexican people who don't like Catholicism, she thinks would love it there. So I'll put in a plug for CLF Spanish Language Ministry and say that I think a global ministry is increasingly important, though we may have politicians who think walls and barriers are a good idea. That's never what faith says to us. So thanks for all your work as your congregation. Let's start talking about Camino Juntas. So how did this start? John, I understand that this was you were kind of the founder of this.
Well, I wouldn't phrase it that way. It really was a group of people. We were finding and are continuing to find people that are arriving here in San Miguel and in the state of Guanajuato who are homeless. You mentioned Minnesota. So we live on a very small alley. We've been here for 8 years, my wife and I. This is our home here in San Miguel. Walked out the front door, and we had a conversation with a Mexican neighbor, and then we started up the street, and a man was sitting on the step right across from our doorway, and he said in perfect English, excuse me, I have a question for you. And I said, yes. And he said, do you have any work for me? And I said, no, what's going on? And he said that he had just arrived in San Miguel. He had lived in Minnesota for 22 years, that he was a welder building bridges, that he had a son who was 21 years old in the Marines, and that he was just deported to San Miguel, and he had just arrived. I said, can I get you something? Can I get you food? And he said, yes, but I need water. And so I got him food and water. His shoes were in tatters. He asked me, he was sunburned, he had a little backpack. He looked exhausted. I asked him if, he asked me, could I give him an exchange for the 3 $1 bills that he had rolled up? And so I gave him a good exchange rate, obviously. So that is an example of what happens to people, some people, when they're deported from Minnesota. And of course, you multiply that. There were 150 people deported from the United States to Mexico, 150,000 people deported from the United States to Mexico in 2017, approximately. Over 12,000 came to the state of Guanajuato, which is where we are. So you can see the problem is significant.
So Samantha, you've come on as the program coordinator. What are your hopes for this program?
Well, hi, first of all. I think this is something that both communities are right now facing. Not just the US with the deportation, but the Mexicans, like giving the people that's facing deportation the support that they need. So what I expect from Caminamos Juntos is working together, both communities, to help these people settle, start to try a life where they can, which is now Mexico, and Caminamos Juntos San Miguel de Allende.
So many of the people, because I know, because up in Minnesota, I'm attending ICE hearings and watching the other side of this horror. Many of them left Mexico when they were very young. Are there cultural considerations, Samantha, as you see, you know, people who are ethnically and, you know, genetically Mexican, but their whole lives they've lived in the United States pretty much. Do you see cultural challenges there?
Oh yeah, I think the cultural aspect is the most important challenge that they're gonna face, because this is a community that they don't know. They're not related to this. So I see as Caminamos Juntos as a way to help them blend in this community, because I mean, this is not right now, this is not their home. So we want to help them start feeling like home.
What are some of the cultural differences that you observe that make it challenging for people to resettle, or is that too big of a question?
I think here in San Miguel, I actually can tell that the first thing is language. A lot of them don't speak Spanish. So that's one thing that it's really important. But then I think the employment culture, the salaries, everything here is so different for them. So, but I mean, San Miguel is one place that both communities are united. So it's a first, I mean, it's a good way to start in San Miguel.
Yeah, because not only is the UU congregation a whole lot of expats, but San Miguel in general has a very high percentage of expats. I know coming up from Mexico City, where we heard virtually no English for 2 weeks, in any given cafe, half the people are likely to be Canadian or from the U.S. Yeah. John, how does the organization try to meet those needs?
Well, first, I just wanted to say that the expats here in San Miguel, as well as the Mexican people, were hearing the incredible language that was coming out of the United States during the election process and after the election process, with all of the racist attitudes and language and xenophobia that was coming. And many, many people were very upset by that, because here we are living in Mexico in this wonderful, wonderful culture here, where people are just so kind and so wonderful to be with such a rich historical tradition and so forth. And to be hearing that sort of rhetoric was very upsetting to so many people. And so we got together as a community, or at least advertised as a community, that we wanted to get together and talk about what's going on and what can we do. And it's difficult, because here we are in Mexico. And, you know, you can't go to your congressman and go to Washington, D.C., and you can't go to protests and whatever. But what can we do here in Mexico? And so we brainstormed that. We probably had 50 people that showed up from multiple organizations, from other religious congregations here in San Miguel, and other groups and individuals. And we brainstormed and said, well, we need to welcome back people who are experiencing and the deportation process. And so it came out of that group that we should do this. And so we've been planning it for a long time, trying to figure out how to put this together for over a year. But what came through for us was the chalice lighter call, the UU chalice lighter call. Let me tell you, that got this off the ground. So we worked.
It was the South District, right? The Southern
region.
Which then Miguel de Allende is part of the Southern region of Unitarian Universalism.
Yeah, we're the only.
Christina was here today. That's her region. So.
Oh, good. I think we're the only UU congregation in Mexico that's part of that for whatever historical reason. But they helped us. And through that, we've raised at this point, we're still raising money through that, although it's ended, over $27,000. Plus our congregation is putting in $5,000. So that gave us a base of $32,000 that has launched this project and allowed us to hire Samantha. And we're just so pleased. And we have resources to pay for emergency shelter and things like that, that Samantha can describe some of the programs that we're planning to put in place. But it was the Chalice Lighter call that got this program started. And it's a broad community program. It's not a program sponsored by our fellowship, but we're one part of a larger project.
So Jessica will be putting onto Facebook links where you can give money to support this project. And I hope that people will do that as well as supporting the other end of it. And just saying what you said, it's so obvious, but the lies being told by this administration about everything, including one of those classic reversals describing the Mexican people invading the United States, when in fact history shows the exact opposite of the United States invading Mexico over and over again. And I'll say I came here in part as tonic for that and have really been helped. And I encourage other Americans to come down here right now because, boy, did I not know how amazing it is. So, yeah, you've been experiencing something for a while I've been to the beaches of Mexico before, but I've never really learned the history and the culture as much. And it is really healing. So Samantha, can you describe some of the programs that John was referring to?
Yeah, of course. We're right now on phase one of Caminamos Juntos, working with a structure. So we have around five committees and five task forces with professional people working on aspects like legal, medical, basic needs, which is housing, food, and clothing, employment. And right now we're gathering all the information that we need. We're approaching government programs, we're approaching social programs and to start assisting the Mexican nationals and support them in the life after deportation.
Would you describe a little bit, Samantha, about what sorts of issues are in the legal task force?
Well, the legal task force is, I think, one of the most important. Sometimes people come back and they don't have the documents needed to start a job, to get into the social security. So one thing that it's going to be a priority is getting these people all the documents they need. Sometimes it's just as basic as the birth certificate. So from that, it's at least like about 10 documents that they need so they can start working on it. We're going to provide all this help, and we're going to help them get all the paperwork in place so they can start finding jobs, they can start applying for programs and all they need.
I understand. Actually, Michael, go ahead.
It sounds very similar to things that we have to deal with homeless folks here. I work with a woman who's homeless in this community, and she has no identification. She has no birth certificate. She has no social security card. So when she goes to apply for a job, she has no proof
Exactly.
That she's eligible to apply for the job. So I imagine, I know how hard that is here. I imagine it's similarly difficult wherever you go.
What we're hearing from anecdotally is that frequently people are stripped of their documentation by the ICE workers before they're deported. Now, whether that's accurate or not, I don't know, but that's what we're hearing anecdotally from people. And so that's a need right off the get.
Yeah, we tend to believe those people. Amnesty International did a whole study of ICE, and it was called a culture of cruelty. And it does seem like ICE deliberately makes it absolutely as difficult as possible for people to make it. And so there's an element of trauma for the people who come here as well as their families back home. But there's that element of trauma that you must also be dealing with. Is that part of what you're looking at as well?
Yeah, we have a task force named Medical and Mental Health Task Force. And we're going to work with therapists. Because after facing that, how support do you need? And we're actually working on a support group for those people to get together, to talk about this, to relate with people that has been facing this too.
We have a Mexican woman who's had experience with running support groups who has volunteered to do that mentoring issue.
Yeah.
And the importance of trying to have mentoring. Samantha's also working with the establishment of a Mexican advisory group.
We're working with a Mexican advisory group because I think it's really important to have both aspects, you know, and starting with the emotional support for those people to start understanding the culture, because it's a new culture for them, and then start making them feel at home with the community. And I think this Mexican advisory group is going to be one of the most important things Caminamos Juntos is going to do, like working with people. Mexican volunteering are, for me now, right now, it's amazing how many people are interested in working with the Mexican nationals that have been deported. We have a lot of people right now that have professional education saying, I want to help. How can I do it?
We have over 100 people who are currently involved in one way or another with the organization. So it's quite a task to get that all figured out, but there's so many different issues that need to be addressed that it's fantastic to have these active groups addressing those issues.
So you described this, what seems to me to be a very, very large challenge that everyone who finds themselves there will face: the cultural challenges, the legal challenges, the psychological, the medical. Is the plan also then to work on employment and housing? I mean, or is there a vision for what comes after those first steps, you know, once people have paperwork and are in a support group?
Right. So there's the short-term emergency nature of things, which
is huge, it seems. It is. Yeah.
And we're partnering with a shelter in Celaya, which is about 30 miles from here, that called ABBA House. And ABBA House supports people who are going north from Central America, and mostly Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. And they also support people who are coming south, having been deported. And these are people who, by and large, are primarily are riding on freight trains. And so ABBA House will help us with some of the immediate crisis piece for the first few days. If someone needs a safe place to sleep, food, shower, clothing. And then we will work collaboratively with them to then bring the person to San Miguel and develop a plan that they would like to have. And so we will do that crisis piece collaboratively with ABBA House in most cases. One of our task forces has found short-term housing here in San Miguel where people can go. And then we need to be looking for longer-term stable housing as people find jobs. And we have a job and education task force that's working around identifying job possibilities. So there's the short-term, immediate, and then the longer-term ongoing issues, Michael. Does that because people need to have stable housing before they can deal with other life issues, and they need to have an income, obviously, as well. The other thing that the Chalice Lighter Call has helped was with, we at least had the seed money to get started, and we're now looking for other foundation money, other grant money, because that's just a seed money situation. And the Chalice Lighter gave us exposure in that area too. So we're actively pursuing other grant possibilities for longer term funding. Because this isn't going to necessarily be a short-term project. But we're hearing stories of you know, people committing suicide and so forth because of the problems of being able to assimilate, being able to find jobs, having lost their families, all of those things. We want to work with, for instance, the sanctuary programs, and we've just sent out a communication to, is it called UU Rise, asking that our program be advertised to the sanctuary programs so that if somebody does not have a family to come to in Mexico, that this would be an option for them. So that's something that we could use help with, actually, is disseminating that this is an option for people. Although we encourage people to go to their families, Mexico has a very strong culture of families supporting one another. We're not suggesting that people should just come to San Miguel. That won't work. But the idea that if someone is really isolated, we're working with somebody now. Actually, there's someone who's been in detention in prison for the last 6 months. And his wife is a U.S. Non-Mexican citizen. And what's going to happen to this man when he gets deported? Should the all the appeals run out? And so we're trying to communicate with her about this is an option, and for him to know that this is a potential option, because he doesn't have a family, as I understand it, here in Mexico. So that's another example.
Yeah. Samantha, I'm curious what your friends, you know, just kind of the people you know in Acapulco or other places. I mean, though we can talk about the horrible language that our current president has been espousing. In fact, many people call President Obama the deporter in chief. This isn't a new phenomenon, all of the people getting deported, although certainly they're ramping up and targeting activists and doing some other things in the United States. But I'm curious kind of what, you know, what the people who have been here all along, if there is a feeling of welcome back, or if there's a feeling of you deserted us, or, you know, and that's a huge question, and every single person probably has 10 different feelings about it. But how would you say in general that the folks who have, you know, who are Mexican are responding to this crisis that's being created in the United States?
Well, I think one thing that Mexicans have is a strong family structure. So I think I don't see Mexicans being rejected to the Mexicans coming back, but I can see how many cultural aspects can be difficult, even for people that live in Mexico, like the not understanding some of the cultural aspect that they're bringing. But I mean, I think right now we're also facing something with the government. So I think Mexico is more united than before. So I just see support right now. There's a lot of aspects, like aspects that can be in an awareness for everybody, but I just see support right now. I think Mexico is becoming a really, really united country with the social aspect that's facing the world.
Do you want to talk about your contact to the person in Guanajuato state?
Yeah, right now we are approaching. Guanajuato is one of the biggest states that has this immigration problem. So there's a government institution called Instituto para el Migrante Guanajuatense. So this is only helping people from Guanajuato that have gone to the U.S. and their families here. And we're going to work with them in a program to help people in Guanajuato get the government help and get all the support they need.
How many of the people that you see there are originally from Guanajuato, and how many are originally from elsewhere in Mexico, but wind up there because it's, you know, where the train left them off, or because it's a more welcoming community?
You know, we're just getting started, Michael, so we don't have large numbers to tell you about, but we have some examples. Mm-hmm. Someone who was married to a U.S. non-Mexican wife was deported. He went to his home community and found that he did this before he was married. He was deported, went to his home community and found out that he was not welcome there because his Spanish wasn't such. He didn't know his family there. So he decided to go back to the United States. So he again entered the United States illegally. And then he married his U.S. wife, has two small children, 2 years old and five, I believe. And he was picked up again and this time deported again. Dropped in detention facilities for a period of time, separated from his family, dropped off on the other side of the border with nothing. His wife decided that she wanted to join him. So they left their house and their car and his job and so forth. And they selected San Miguel de Allende to come to specifically because she did not have a significant command. She didn't know Spanish, basically. And his Spanish was not very good. So they chose San Miguel to come to, and they arrived here in June of last year. And she is a very active advocate and spokesperson, and is an active player on our steering committee for Caminamos Juntos. And she's actually going to talk, Meg. You'll get to meet her on Sunday, Katarina. She has some of her own YouTube material and so forth, trying to educate people about that. And she'll be helping. She wants to help families reunite here in Mexico, should they wish to do that. And she's a fantastic spokesperson. So that's an example, again, of the welcoming part. You know, it really varies depending on how much connection people have and who they are and who their families are. But generally, the Mexican families are very strong. One of the problems when you're talking about some of the pushback might be around, will there be enough jobs? Mm-hmm. Because we have, while San Miguel looks quite wealthy, we have an incredible ring of poverty all around San Miguel. We would like to be able to create jobs. Someone has proposed establishing a call center here because we have people who speak good English who will be coming. So someone has started to think about that as an example. So maybe we could create jobs in San Miguel. So if any of the listeners have an interest or ideas about that, that would be something we would like to hear about. And some of those activities, like a business plan for a call center, could be done in Minnesota, Meg.
You don't want me doing your business plan, John.
Michael, maybe you would do a business plan, Michael. But anyway, you got the idea.
Also not my strength, but maybe one of our viewers, it is theirs.
So the interfaith piece of this, you're working with the Salinas Center, which, as I understand, is led by an evangelical minister. Is there an interfaith community around there that's, I mean, for most of us doing this work in the U.S., it's not a Unitarian Universalist thing. We're in broad coalitions with groups of immigration groups and, you know, all kinds of folks. Is there that kind of a coalition in San Miguel or in the surrounding county?
You mentioned the program in Celaya, and while you mentioned that he was a minister, I want to point out that he's not. You see no evidence of that when you're in the ABBA facility. Yes, he says he sees God in everyone who passes through his door, but he's not promoting religion in the facility. He's just one of these fantastic people. It's he, his wife, and his two adult children, a volunteer to run the shelter, which has a capacity of 80 people. 2 weeks ago when I was there, they had 150 people in the shelter. Anyway, so we're collaborating with him, and he's collaborating with the International Red Cross and so forth. Here in San Miguel, the original planning group that I talked about, we had other religious groups with us, in addition to other, like the Rotary Club and other organizations. So he was actually a bishop of the in the Episcopal Church, has been an active member of the our steering committee. We're outreaching to and have had in the past people from one of the other churches here, and also from the synagogue. Well, we have a Jewish center here.
Are the Catholics jumping in any way? I mean, the Pope has been outspoken about immigration, but in the U.S., it ranges from diocese to diocese.
Mario Lopez is a member of the steering committee and is chairing the Mexican advisory group. And he's made some outreach to the Catholic Church. To this point, we have not been successful at bringing the Catholic Church into the group, but we've tried and we'll continue to do that. And we'll continue to try to work with the other religious groups to try to bring them in. But we do have, as I say, representatives from other organizations here.
I'm wondering if you might tell us some of the other stories of the people that you've met doing this. Because, you know, for me, you know, so much of this is about humanizing this this inhumane system the United States is.
Right.
I
met a Mexican man in a city that's relatively close to here. It's Pátzcuaro, when my wife and I were there with our grandchildren visiting. And he's very concerned also in Pátzcuaro about this issue. And he wants to know how we're developing, and would like to use us as a possible model, Caminamos Juntos as a possible model, to do some replication in Pátzcuaro. And he was telling me about a young man. He was in his mid-20s, who he befriended, who had been deported, and he said there was a group of 30 different people that he knows in Pátzcuaro, not a community that we'll be serving. We're focusing on San Miguel. How sad it was, because this particular man was very likable, very nice person with great English skills, but he had been involved in gangs in the United States before he had been deported, and had gang tattoos very visible on his face and neck and head. He said while he was, he was extremely capable, he thought, and was able to, would have been a very effective employee in this man's organization. He said he just couldn't hire him because they interfaced with the public and so forth. And that's what this man faced continually as he was trying to find jobs. That has sort of re-emphasized the idea of trying to set up a like a call center, for instance, Michael, where people can do their work but don't necessarily have to be seen. I think there are probably others who would fit into that example as well. And he ultimately committed suicide just recently because of his frustration of not fitting into society and not being able to find a job, and really identifying himself more as a U.S. Resident citizen, even though he wasn't a citizen, but a U.S. resident, as opposed to somebody in Mexico, and how, what a struggle it is. So that's why I think these support groups are very important, and why job opportunities are going to be so important. I don't want to bore you with organizational structure, but maybe Samantha could just quickly, just to give you an idea of how well we're organized, we think relatively well.
Yeah.
just some of the other groups that we have that are working on issues.
Well, the first one is participant support, which is the first committee that's going to have contact with the people and has all the things that we talk about, Michael, like the shelter and the housing and the immediate basic needs, the documents. Then we have a communication committee. Right now we're gonna launch the website. We're gonna have a Facebook page, and the volunteer committee, which is one of the most important committees, because we are working with amazing people that are volunteering their efforts and the skills. And then the resource and mobilization committee, who is working on the grants and all the things that we need for funding, and the fiscal committee, because we're having an AC in Mexico and the US. So,
yeah, yesterday I went with Mario Lopez, who's on the board, to sign for our organizational status here in Mexico. So in 3 more weeks, hopefully we'll have that. Mm-hmm. We're also probably today submitting paperwork to establish a 501c3 in the United States. We had originally hoped not to do that, that we would be able to partner with another organization, but the administrative costs associated with other organizations, it makes it more cost effective for us actually to set up our own. So we're putting those structures in place as well. So that will help us, obviously, with the grant, other grant funding opportunities in order to be able to continue this project after the Chalice Lighter seed money has been used. So, again, ideas that people may have about possible ongoing funding sources would be very helpful to us, as well as the Chalice Lighter program continues to function. So, as a possible, as a place to fund us. And that can be found on our website, UUFSMA, Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of San Miguel de Allende.
I don't know why I'm frozen. Oh, there, I'm unfrozen. Freeze tag.
Welcome to have you back.
Thank you. What are some things that people on the other side of the border, you've been mentioning some, but if you you know, are there committees that be like this that where people could actually join in, or are you more looking for individuals to kind of contribute stuff? How are you anticipating, and maybe you're not yet because it sounds like you're very, very busy getting going, but looping in the people who would like to help and connect up from the other side of the border?
Well, right now, I think the most important thing is the volunteers here in San Miguel, that we can provide the immediate support. But that's a super good suggestion, Meg. I think working with organizations and with people that can volunteer from the U.S., it's something that we should be reaching out.
So what Samantha is saying, you know, like this idea of helping with a business plan for establishing a company, or you know, maybe a cooperative, I guess would probably be the, from my vantage point, might be a good thing, so that we could create jobs here in San Miguel for people. And our incorporation document leaves it open so that we're not just having, the corporation doesn't have to only support people who have been deported, but if we created an organization that could both hire people who have been deported, but also Mexican citizens here who would benefit from that as well. And, you know, there are different groups of people who are being deported in that 150,000 that were deported. We've been talking and focusing today a lot on people who have gone to the United States when they were young or have lived in the United States for 20, 30. We have an example of someone who is 65 years old and lived in the United States for 50 years with family in New York and was deported. But we also have people who have gone for shorter periods of time, but yet are uprooted from their lives in the United States. Maybe 5 years they lived in the United States. Maybe they went as an adult, but they returned to San Miguel and they're facing some of the same issues that Samantha talked about. You know, there's still a cultural issue in reestablishing here, loss of their family in the United States, the emotional issues associated with that. And so we're learning, or we're hearing from different people who go out to some of the poor villages around San Miguel that this is a problem because people are returning and don't have jobs. So we need to be thinking about that group of people as well. You know, again, people who maybe went later in life, but still established a lifestyle and may even have a family in the United States that they've lost. So I think support groups for different populations of people.
One of the targeted groups I'm noticing in Minnesota and other places is activist leaders who are actually organizing. The immigrant communities are really being targeted and removed. And I've kind of fantasized, this isn't something that you have plenty of a long list, but I've kind of fantasized about some kind of a leadership school with those brilliant organizing minds, joining the organizing minds that are already here, thinking about, you know, how to create this kind of stuff, because they are very deliberately removing some of the, you know, the organizers from Mexico and all other parts of the world. And it seems to me that that's actually a very valuable resource, you know, those minds. And it would be a dream for some, you know, someone who's listening who has connections to Ford or something, but to bring those people together somewhere to envision, because Samantha, I think you were alluding earlier that the positive to this is that it does unite those of us who so vehemently disagree with this kind of selfish, self-centered policy. As we close, because we're in our last few minutes, Samantha, what would be your greatest hope for the work that you're doing? And John, I'll ask you the same question next, but what's your real hope that you can accomplish?
Well, right now, Meg, I think accomplishing all the objectives that Caminamos Juntos have. I want to mention too, really quickly, that we are having a local event awareness to raise awareness. And this thing that we're doing here gives me an idea of what you're mentioning, working with other organizations around the world, talking about this, and just bringing an event online discussing this this issue will be amazing. And I think for me personally, bringing both communities together, it's the most important thing, because these people need both supports. So I don't know, John.
Well, we're certainly fortunate to have Samantha helping us with this project. You know, I think it's, you know, what we talked about, this is a humanitarian effort to support people who are in need of that support. And we've talked about the specifics of what people need. And so that's what Caminamos Juntos was established to do, to provide that humanitarian support and to welcome people who happen to arrive in San Miguel back, and to make sure that we treat everyone with respect and dignity, particularly since they've come out of situations where that has not happened, and to let them know that we're here to be of help. And again, if people have ideas about how we can get in touch with and let the sanctuary programs know about the fact that we're here, we would appreciate that support, and obviously any ongoing funding support. But thank you so much for your humanitarian work.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being here. Next week, we have Jennifer Nordstrom and Manish Mishra Marzetti talking about their new book, Justice on Earth, People of Faith Working at the Intersections of Race, Class, and the Environment. I hope that this new platform worked well for you. We'll be tweaking it. Jessica, thanks for doing the tech. Michael, thanks for joining us. John and Samantha, thank you so much for this work, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been an episode of The View. If you would like to learn more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.